Poets wrote that Henry VIII's court was a slippery place, and they wrote from experience. Sir Thomas Wyatt was arrested 3 times and just managed to keep his head. Henry Howard, Earl of Surrey, was arrested 4 times and didn't. In fact, if you're looking for an example of exactly what not to do at Henry VIII's court, then Surrey's your man. He may have been a fabulous poet and a brave soldier, but he was a spectacularly awful courtier. How do you keep your head at Henry VIII's court? Don't do what Surrey did. Don't, for example, shed blood there, as Surrey did in 1537. Here at Hampton Court, perhaps in this very room, who knows, let's pretend, he assaulted a courtier, and he was very lucky not to have his right arm amputated, which was the standard punishment for such an offence. Don't, as Surrey did in 1543, rampage through the city of London, smashing windows and firing missiles at prostitutes. Don't advise your sister to become Henry VIII's mistress, especially not when your first cousins are the late Queens Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard. Don't, even in verse, write about aged kings wedded to will that work without advice, or about the bitter fruit of false concupiscence. It's unwise. Don't brag incessantly about your noble blood, as Surrey did, and he should have known better. His maternal grandfather, as we've heard, was the Duke of Buckingham. And Henry VIII really never liked to be reminded that there were alternative sources of power, nor did he like to be outshone, as Surrey constantly tried to do, with flashy gowns of gold and vainglorious portraits and provocative, and it was ultimately decreed, treasonous coats of arms. So you could argue that the remarkable thing about the Earl of Surrey's career at court is not that he lost his head, but that he was allowed to keep it for so long. Henry VIII was remarkably tolerant towards him. And as we heard, he was remarkably tolerant to a lot of people. He wasn't this sort of classic tyrant that we sometimes think. Surrey's antics probably amused him more than anything else. But the moment he perceived Surrey to be a threat, the moment he thought he was aiming at the throne, then suddenly, as Thomas More had warned, the fun became fatal. Now, of all the mistakes Surrey made at the Tudor court, probably the most heinous was to alienate a substantial proportion of it. Surrey never lost an opportunity to sneer at the Arrivistes, the new erected men, as he put it, who had risen to high office. They love no nobility, he said, and if God called away the king, they should smart for it. Now, I think maybe, possibly, if he tried to cultivate the friendship of these people instead of threaten them, maybe he would have survived. Henry VIII himself always said that he wanted people to be honest with him. He made a great song and dance about this. People should tell him the truth. He spoke plainly, so should they. And this chimed in very well with the Renaissance conception of the ideal courtier, one who, through his virtuous conduct and good counsel, could persuade a king to rule, or a ruler, or a prince, to rule in the interests of the Commonwealth. Well, the reality in England was somewhat different, especially after 1534, when the Act of Treason meant that even words could be construed as treason, and especially, as we've seen in his later years, when Henry VIII grew increasingly suspicious, increasingly capricious, and correspondingly vulnerable to intrigue and conspiracy. "Who will tell the prince his fault?" asked Henry's cousin, Henry's exiled cousin, Reginald Pole. "And if one such be found, where is the prince that will hear him?" Where indeed? Far easier to resort to flattery and blind obedience. "Use virtue as it goeth nowadays," Wyatt said, "in word alone to make thy language sweet." Well, there were many courtiers who understood this, but perhaps the one who understood it best was William Paget. He was the son of a bailiff. Surrey called him a catchpole. And he was about as different from the Earl as it was possible to be. Low-born, university-educated, as grey as Surrey was technicoloured, Paget was one of the court's success stories. He started off in the service of Stephen Gardiner, and then when he sensed that the bishop's star was waning, he transferred his allegiance to Thomas Cromwell. But he survived the chief minister's fall in 1540. Paget was very good at this. He was never so rooted in one camp that he couldn't extricate himself when the going got tough. It was Paget who advised Edward Seymour, Earl of Hertford, to make friends in the Privy Chamber as well as the Privy Council, and thereby paved the way for his seizure of power in the next reign. Everyone wanted to be Paget's friend. Everyone claimed him as a friend. But few were really sure of his allegiance, especially in terms of politics. As one contemporary punned, he will have one part in every pageant, if by praying or paying he may put in his foot. It was men like Paget and Peter and Paulet, Sadler, Audley, you've heard, there are many, who survived, and not only survived, but thrived at Henry VIII's court. They were more willow than oak. They were circumspect, unobtrusive, pragmatic, moderate. Now, this may not have made them as glamorous as a Surrey, or as powerful as a Wolsey, or indeed as sexy as an Anne Boleyn, but it did ensure that they kept their heads when it sometimes seemed as though all about them were losing theirs. Thank you.